Welcome, everyone, to episode 48 with Caster Calls with Zombie Grub. I'm here with Medic Casts, a League of Legends shoutcaster and actually certified doctor, which I'm sure we'll get into. But big name in the League of Legends scene, and as such, a big name actually in the esports scene, since League of Legends tends to dominate, I guess, the sphere of esports. So very happy to have you on. Thank you again for coming on. We do usually talk about a little bit about backstory. I know that you've probably talked a lot about it because people find your backstory particularly interesting, and it is interesting. But I love doing it just kind of like to provide that foundation for your casting career. So if you give us, I guess, a quick backstory about how you came to be a caster for League of Legends.
Oh, sure. So I was in med school studying to be a doctor in the UK, and I got really drunk one day while playing scrims with my mates, and we had too many people. So I said I'd cast the games on Twitch and, you know, stream them out to a few people. Did it, listened back to it, really enjoyed the sound of my own voice, so decided I could do it a little bit more. And just kept doing it volunteer-wise in the UK for a while. I was quite lucky because Pulse and Stress, who were like the UK casters before me, had just left the scene. So there was kind of a gap for volunteer UK casters. So I did all the UK events, you know, Insomnia's, Epic Lands, all of that jazz. And then started doing work with Riot and applied to Riot, got rejected, applied to Riot again a year later and got accepted to do Challenger Series. So left my job as a doctor and became a full-time caster for Riot. Well, freelance now, but I was full-time at the time.
Oh, okay. Also good information. So that was 2016, was it?
17, I think, was the year that I started doing Challenger Series, and then 18 was the year I joined LEC, or EULCS as it was then.
Okay, and you said that you applied and got rejected at least once. Did it come with any notes, the rejection, or was it just like, nope, bye?
Trevor Quickshot was quite good at giving me notes. So he and I had been talking for a little while, and he said to my initial application that I was not in control of my hype, which I still don't think I'm really in control of my hype. 9 times out of 10, I just shout a lot and get really excited. But that was his main sort of working point, was work out how to control what you're saying, and then we'll look back at things in a year. So I came back to him after a year with a few more VODs and said, hey, what do you think of this? And he seemed to like it.
No, oh, that's good improvement then in a year. So during that year, did you take that really to heart? Was that the thing that you focused on when you were casting? Or do you think that there is like, yeah, that was a big point, but there's also a lot of other things that I got better at too in that year?
I think generally, like, as soon as you start really, if you're lucky enough to be in a position where you can put a lot of time into like working on a craft like casting, especially at the start, you have huge leaps and bounds everywhere, right? You're going from a 10% of your max skill to like 50% in the first year or so. And then after that, you get smaller and smaller improvements in different areas. And now, like, I'm working on a 2% change per year or a 3% change per year because you're trying to move that needle just a little bit. So I think although my control was like a big point of improvement, I changed a lot of different things. I was actually working for a company called Super Evil Megacore at the time, who made a game called Vainglory. I don't know if it still exists, actually, but it was a 3v3 MOBA on your phone. And so I was getting a lot of reps in just casting that and working out where my style was and, you know, where my comedy landed and what sort of caster I wanted to be. And because of that development, I think that was a more holistic change than just shouting less and being a bit more in control.
Hmm. And did you work a lot on your, I guess, knowledge of the game? You know, what was the, I suppose, requirement if we're talking like this is like a job that you apply for? Was there any notes on your education, knowledge, or did they say like, well, you're going to be play-by-play, so we're not too worried about that?
Yeah, I think that is the general perception about play-by-plays, isn't it? They're not that smart about the game. They don't really know what they're talking about. They're just there to look good and to shout loudly. And I think it's true in some cases. Like, it's especially probably 5 to 7 years ago, the general resounding consensus was the play-by-play is there to be hype and the color casters are there to add the analysis. And I think I'm talking mostly from a league eye right now, because, you know, I know the league space the most. I think that's definitely started to change over the last few years. I think Freak was a good front runner of like a play-by-play can be really knowledgeable about certain aspects. He's really good on the numbers and like, is this efficient? Is this a good build path? What would be the best idea here? And then you have people like me as well, where my knowledge, although is now quite, it's quite focused, I'm very knowledgeable about like support matchups and specifically about Rakan. And I spent actually the start of this year working very hard to get good at League, so I could talk from a smarter mindset. I think there has been a shift away from that general play-by-play to just the hype guys. But that wasn't actually your question. Your question was, did I work on my knowledge all those years ago? And I think I definitely did, but not to the degree that my knowledge is at now. I kind of leaned on my color caster to teach me in the game, and then I used that to go further rather than deliberately putting time into getting smarter back then.
And when you brought up the changing atmosphere, which, yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. StarCraft went through its whole ups and downs. We were one of the first big esports, and I think that came with a lot of people who didn't necessarily know the game like intimately, but were, you know, very exciting and entertainment based. Now the expectation in a 12-year-old esport is very much you have to know the game as well as do play by play. But anyways, like the overall atmosphere you're talking about, do you think that it did change or is changing more to, okay, you should know, or like most play-by-play casters know, because it needed to, because that was the community consensus, or just because it makes you a better play-by-play commentator to know a little bit more about the game?
It's interesting because there's like a couple of facets to that question, and it kind of echoes what happened, as you say, in StarCraft, where when an esport starts out, being passionate tends to be enough, not just in casting, but like in working for a team or in coaching, all of these things. Like, you can just be really passionate about the game. People are like, we'll give you the chance because we know you'll work hard enough to get good at the skill that we actually want you to have. And then over the years, as the esport develops, you now look for teams that are saying, oh, we want someone who knows PR and will teach you the game. Like, we'll teach you what you need to know about League of Legends. We just want you to know that you're good at marketing, or you're good at hype, or you're good at analysis, or whatever, right? And so I think as esports develop generally, you do get to this point where we're all just a lot smarter than they were back then. And that's no insult to like casters back then or players back then or general just the space back then. It's just there's a lot more data. There's a lot more tape for us to look at. And there's a lot more information being shared for just the general populace to understand and know about a game. Like the INSEC in League was a huge thing when it came out. Like, it's where you jump behind someone with Lee Sin and you kick them back into your team. And it was huge. Like, the ability was so game-changing that they named it after the player that did it, right? Hmm. And now, if you're in gold, which is like the 50th percentile of League players, you're expected to be able to know this mechanic. And it just shows like the change in the way that we understand the game and that you play the game, and the expectation of someone in the space has developed over the last few years. And I think the same is true for a play-by-play and even for a color caster, right? A color caster in the past probably could have just said, these are the team comps. This is what this team wants to do. Let's see if they do it. And now you're talking about like different shifting patterns and how much XP you lose from three waves and whether that's worth it if you take a Rift Herald off towards the top side and all of this stuff, right? So I think there is like a general push from play-by-plays and from myself to be smarter. But I also think the community as a whole is just more intelligent about the game because it's been around longer. And so you have to be smarter and you have to know more stuff to be able to present at the highest level.
I appreciate you using a reference that I would understand. Lee Sin's like the one character that I played. Yeah, I mean, that was a perfect example, really. And I think we see that in anything in life. I mean, not to get too philosophical here, but like, you know, kids being taught stuff in elementary school is very different than what they were being taught 50 years ago. Yeah. But do you think that this also, if you look into the future a little bit, I don't know, we'll get into maybe your goals and your far out, you know, anticipations of esports. But do you think in the future that you're also going to be looking at past casts, you know, 5 years back and be like, oof, yeah, we didn't know anything. Like, we're still growing. We're still babies. Esports commentary is still very new compared to traditional broadcasting.
I definitely think there's the swing that way, right? Because the game will change. And so you will look back at it and be like, oh, we didn't know about all these new mechanics. But it's like, if the game has changed, then the new mechanics, you shouldn't be expected to know about them. But the way that we present esports is very different to the style of commentary I grew up with. I was a big rugby fan. I watched a lot of golf, snooker, football, you know, and all of those sports, the expectation is on the viewer to understand the game to a certain degree. And I don't think we actually have that in esports a lot of the time. I think a lot of the time we expect people not to know much and we try and teach them everything. And there's a lot of stuff going on the Rift. And so there's a lot more to teach. But in football, just be like, oh, you know, they're playing a 4-4-2. It's like, well, you wouldn't be expected to explain what a 4-4-2 is. Or You wouldn't be expected to explain what a sack is in the NFL or, you know, any of these things. Whereas in esports, we do that. And we try and look for the places you can give a little bit more knowledge, you know, the higher echelons of analysis. And then you look generally to the lower denominators for your general explanations and what you're talking about most of the time. So I think there will be a shift. I think the struggle always is with esports, how ever-changing it is. I can't expect someone that's been watching League for 5 years to understand the current meta, because if a patch comes in and an item changes, or if, you know, they remove Blink from Stalkers in StarCraft, it's like, well, this guy's going Stalkers. If you watched the game 5 years ago, it's very different to how he's going to play it now, right? My StarCraft knowledge isn't the best. I used to play Protoss and Amuve, and that's all I understand pretty much.
It was good. So, it was perfect.
But yeah, like, that doesn't happen in conventional sports or in traditional sports to the same degree. And when it does, that's like the talking point. So like VAR was a big thing in football, where they introduced video-assisted refereeing. And they'd look at a decision and be like, oh, is this the right decision? They'll get some lines out and they'll be like, oh, was he offside? Was he not offside? And that was like the talk of all commentary for a good 6 months after it happened. And if we ever did that in esports, it's like, well, cool. That was relevant 4 months ago when that was actually in the game. Now it's being changed. So yes, I think commentary will change, but I don't think we'll ever get to the point that I would like to be at, which is more laid back, more conversational, and less teaching, at least at the highest level. Because I think for some broadcasts it can work, but for a tier one LEC, LCS, like, marketing opportunity, I don't think that style of commentary is the predominant one that we'll see.
That's an interesting point you bring up, that you feel like you can't be conversational and just... Yeah, more guys hanging out, I suppose, which is what it feels like to me, coming from a StarCraft background, is what esports commentary basically is based off of. So you guys have
like things like Home Story Cup. Like, I used to love watching Home Story Cup. It's like, that is the epitome of conversational esports commentary. But you can't, at least in the way that I view esports, from a business point of view, it doesn't make sense to have that commentary, right? And in the end, you are looking to make money out of it. And I'm not saying that's what I think esports should be. That's the space we occupy in the world that we occupy, right? So.
And it's totally valid. I mean, the fact is that League of Legends is... I mean, we talk about tier one esports, talk about League, Dota, CSGO. It's pretty much the big three. But, you know, League of Legends, I still think, is like even more, right? Because Dota has this very like freelance, just kind of like doing your thing until international shows up. CSGO has its standard casters and repeat casters, and it's very, very well done. But it's not the same setup that League of Legends is. League of Legends is very unique. It's very much probably the closest that we're going to get to like a professional broadcasting, not to disparage any other esports. So you're totally like valid in this. It's just something I never really thought of, that you guys would feel limited in your approach. And you say that you don't think that it's working out business wise. And I can't help but ask kind of like why you would think that, because we have Tastosis, right? And they're chill. They're super chill. They do the best league in the scene, and they're just like, it's two guys having fun, right? And people would usually say that that's really good. They got paid the big bucks, right? So when did it change? How did it change? And, you know, why would it not be, applicable to the League of Legends broadcast?
So I think I'm going to try and add as many provisos and clarifiers on here as I can, because I don't want to say I think conversational casting is bad. In fact, I aspire to be more conversational in my casting. And I think Tastosis, as you say, incredible example, like two of the best casters that have ever existed in any esports space, in my opinion. I think a lot of people would put them up there as the GOATs of all time, you know? So I think that style of casting is very powerful and conveys a message, and makes you feel like you're sitting on a sofa with two friends watching a game, you know, a sports game, which is great. I also think in the league space, there's the LCK style of casting, which is very similar to that, or at least grew up in a very similar fashion. Monty Ndoa, Papa Smithy, Atlas, all of them, you know, amalgamated into this very conversational style of broadcast. And it was propagated mostly because they had slower games on average. The games didn't tend to have as many kills, so they'd just talk about whatever they wanted to, you know, Pokemon, Magic. They'd talk about like topics that were in nerd culture, and people would enjoy it because, like, I can relate to that. The issue I have when it comes to casting from an LEC and LCS mindset, I think, or I can only speak to LEC, but I think LCS is like the closest comparison when I watch their broadcast, but I can't speak to like the behind the scenes there, is if I sit there in front of 200,000 people or however many people are watching, right? And I say, okay, nothing's happening in this game. I want to talk about Pokemon. There becomes an instant divide in my audience, right? Where say 30% of them like Pokemon. Okay, well, I've lost 70,000, 140,000 people from the conversation right now. And they've tuned in to watch League of Legends. So if I want to keep them all engaged and keep them, you know, watching the screen and looking at the sponsors, which is the reason that esports exists, you know, it's to make money. At least the reason that the esport that I am currently in exists. I think esports generally doesn't exist to make money, but it has grown into a position where it makes money, right? Is I need to keep those people as engaged as possible. And so if I want to go to that more conversational style, I have to make it about League, which you can do and can work very well at certain times. But what I find is when I want to inject that little bit of personality and humor, it's mostly a 10 to 20 second tidbit. You know, Medivedi time was a big thing a couple of years ago. We do like funny intros and it's like 30 second long intros. They're really amusing. Or we found them really funny. But if you're like, if someone doesn't find it endearing, cool. We have 40 minutes of League of Legends to talk about. You're going to enjoy watching this next bit. But if we did that for 20 of those 40 minutes or 10 of those 40 minutes, then you just alienate and alienate and alienate more people. Hmm. Right. And there is also, apart from just the business side of I want people watching because it's good that people watch because then we have higher view numbers, then we get, you know, higher KPI, and then more people want to buy money, buy sponsors, etc. There's also the just general community sentiment, you know, stop talking about random shit and talk about the game, please. You know, it's easy to ignore, but it's also really hard to ignore when you get DMs after a game. It's like, why on earth were you talking about this thing? Medic sucks. He's the worst. Da da da. Because I started trying to do that more a few years ago. I started trying to be a bit more quirky, a bit more personable, and just found that people hated it. Like, oh, the people that spoke hated it. Maybe a lot of people liked it, but the vocal majority were, a vocal minority were very hard to deal with. And so I heard away from it and I said, okay, if I'm going to be funny, I'll be funny for like 10, 15 seconds, or it would be funny to do with something in the game. And then the rest of the time, we're just going to talk about League of Legends and we can have fun and we can enjoy ourselves doing that. But it's not going to be this two guys just chatting on a couch. It's like, I'm here to inform you and educate you. And you guys are here to have fun listening to me do that.
There's a lot to unpack. Sure. I mean, they're all good points. And
you can say they're bad points, by the way. It's not often. I have these discussions. So if you think my points are actually totally invalid, I'd love to have that conversation.
Not necessarily. I was going to say, though, first, I really empathize with that point about like trying to be more like comedic or something like that. Because basically we get, you guys aren't Tastosis, stop trying. Yeah. So that's always nice.
Yeah, you're not LCK, stop trying. I'm not here for LCK. I'm here to watch League of Legends, not talk about Elden Ring. It's like,
There you go. But I do wonder if it's you know, basically how League of Legends has become, again, kind of like the most, I think, it's the most like, again, that traditional broadcasting professionalism without actually feeling like they just kind of stole it. Like, I do think Overwatch had an identity problem in the first Overwatch League, where they're very much trying to replicate like professional broadcasting and just felt kind of like, I don't think you're utilizing your talent quite right and your production quite right. Like, we can do better. And I think they did get better as they had a lot of good talent. But League of Legends, I feel like, has already found its identity. It's already very comfortable. Anyways, but you guys still have a lot of moments, a lot of history that maybe just doesn't exist in other esports right now. So, you know, the community sentiment of the different regions being so, there's such a strong identity, apparently, they're messaging you and saying, you know, talk about the game. But then also I'm thinking of the actual in-game moments, right? Where you guys have the same thing that like Valorant CSGO does, right? Where like you have a pop-up that'll be like, and this was the Coca-Cola sponsored Snipe of Baron or whatever the hell it is, right? You guys have all those moments, right? And it's also a very complex but still action-packed game where, as you said, most of the time you don't get that long lull like apparently Korea did.
I think that's meta dependent, but a lot of the time the reason Korea became sort of the conversational cast was we had a very slow meta just generally in the world, but Korea was like the slowest. It was like 40 minutes for a kill, sort of slow.
And then But the final point that I want to make on this, why it could be so different, is that it does feel, and absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, same with the people listening out there, it does feel like the LCK had their standout stars. And of course, it's influenced because Monte and Doa were so popular amongst the entire esports sphere. And it feels like Europe and North America, you guys are very much pushing more towards the overall broadcast is really tight. It's really great. And we don't necessarily have the standout duos. So is, you know, do you think that that is another reason as to why the community pushes you to be like, you know, League of Legends, you know, you guys aren't a duo. You guys aren't trying to entertain us like Monte and Doa or Tastosis. Or is it more like the history and the community sentiment in general? Because it is kind of unique that I feel like I like a lot of the casters. Obviously, a lot of them are OGs and do big things. But it doesn't have that same kind of like brand identity that like Monte and Doa had, right? Which we can talk about like duos and the Riot not liking them and all that maybe a bit after.
Sure. I think... I can understand where you're coming from. I think being part of Medivedi, you know, my pride takes a little bit of a hit when you say there's not a standout duo. But like, I that's not saying you're wrong. It's just like a, you know, you're always going to feel a little rocked back when someone says that you're not a standout duo. But I think you are right. And I think Quickshot to Fissio was a standout duo. I think they were like the last. So you had Joe Miller, D-Man, Quickshot to Fissio, and then it kind of petered. And I think part of that is the community has grown up a little bit. Because if you look, like Monte Doa were the standout duo in LCK, and then Papa Smith in Atlas, obviously. But now I wouldn't be able to identify a standout duo in the LCK. Same with the LPL, same with the LEC, same with the LCS. And that's not saying there aren't any, like, there are no good caster duos there. It's just, as you say, there's no, like, this is the name. These are the two that always are together, that always get to do everything together. And part of that is, as you alluded to, Riot had a tendency to try and make duos not so much a thing. And part of it as well is that the identity around a region, I think now is built much more as the region's identity than being applied to the people that work in the region, rather than the people that work in the region developing the region's identity. Mm-hmm. When the LEC was formed, and not the EU-LCS, like when we were making the LEC, there was a lot of discussion amongst the casters and amongst production and our producers about like, how are we going to make this? What's our goal? How do we want to create this space? And there was a lot of push by talent to like, this is how we want to do things. We moved a lot of our comedic stuff out of game or out of the show into like pre-made stuff. You know, the music video is a huge hit. Dracos and Betty led that a lot of the time. And there was this talent lead where the talent were both creating the show, but also at the forefront of the show. And I think over the last few years, that's definitely been lost. I assume it's lost in LCS as well, where it is we have a formula that works. We're just going to keep putting you into this formula and keep doing it. It's actually one of my worries with the LEC and generally with, you know, in any esport where you get to a position you're too comfortable. It's like, yeah, cool, we can make another music video. Yeah, cool, we can do another 3-wall segment. We can do another 9-wall segment. We can do another playoffs checkup. But at some point, you need someone like really pushing you to actually make something big new. Because we make small new things all the time. You know, there's a new graphics patch, or we do a cool new opening ceremony. You know, we had volcanoes this time. It's like, sweet. It's really sweet and cool to be part of that. But are we actually pushing the forefront of esports anymore? Are we actually pushing ourselves to create something super special? Or are we just saying, okay, you know, 90% is good enough? I think like I've had that personal experience this year as well, where it's like 90% is good enough just generally in my casting. And we can talk about that later as well when we've moved off the that point. But yeah, I think the demise of the duo is definitely something we've seen a little bit, at least in League.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of controversial subjects and opinions and behind the scenes knowledge. It's basically public at this point that yes, there definitely was an impact from duos being too strong. That's public information at this point. And that, you know, a bunch of different companies wanted to stop that.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of people will point that and be like, well, that's messed up. Obviously, they're bringing a lot of star power and yes, they cost more, but then they also get all these like casual fans. Again, it's a whole conversation, but I do feel like it is perhaps it sounds better to me that you would have a lot of people coming together and trying to make like an overall product.
Yeah.
Very good. Especially when you have the opportunity, you know, you get to be in person and talking to each other and having all these meetings like the League of Legends scenes does. So it sounds better. And maybe that's also because I am influenced, even though I don't watch much traditional broadcasting. When I think of traditional broadcasting, I know there are standout stars, obviously like John Madden, all grew up in the 90s, having the games. Mm-hmm. But it's not as personality driven on the commentator side at all. Like esports is so much more commentator personality driven. So I feel like you guys are actually, again, kind of leading the charge that's parallel with traditional broadcasting, but isn't, you know, you're trying not to skirt over and just be, I don't know, as boring as they are, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there was something you said with like the having a drive behind a show which is like group driven, which I really agree with. Like having those meetings and hashing out like what's our goal, what's the aim for this show, what are we actually trying to do, and then you have like your mission statement or your set of three pillars that you build every segment on, and you ask yourself, you know, is it fan focused, is it entertaining or educating? And like I'm just bringing these off the top of my head, but that's the sort of thing we would have. And you said that's something that does happen in League. I would say it did happen in at least in the LEC. And I think part of that is like a lot of us being moved to freelance, and COVID's happened as well. So like maybe there is like a COVID bias towards my thoughts, but a lot of the stuff we do now is like as the play by play right now, I go to a meeting on a Wednesday morning. I say, cool, here are the stats. We get given all the stats. And then there's the AD meeting, and it's like, okay, here's the producers will come in and say, here's what we think the structure of the show should be. Let's plug and play what we can put in here. And there's less of that, like, let's meet up, let's like workshop a bunch of ideas of cool shit that we think is happening, and let's try and like develop this into a good show. And more of this is sort of the comfort I'm talking about. Like more of the, okay, we know all these things work. Which one of these things are we going to pick from the hat this week? I wouldn't be surprised if that's happening in other places as well. I can't say for sure. But I think that is one of those things that always like concerns me a little bit. I will say as well, although traditional sports broadcasting, as you say, is very show-driven rather than talent-driven, I think shows like, I think it's called Inside the NBA.
Yeah,
things like that really like, they elevate the sport they're a part of. Now, it's not the full, it's not a full broadcast done like that, but it shows the power that a show like that can have and talent-driven content can have in the space. And it's something that I think esports generally should look at and say, how do we include this sort of thing on our show to make it not entirely talent-driven, but to actually emphasize these personalities, and by doing that, emphasize our league or like elevate our league. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's always that worry between both the employed and the employer of like who's going to overshadow who and like be able to
I mean, that's
take
a big
advantage
thing
of
in
who.
Esports, right? That's happened over many, many decades in esports. So
yeah, and to be clear, like I've listened to a couple of the podcast with like Monty and Lewis and all them, and you know they bring up how one of the commentators is being paid like super big bucks because I think Amazon was putting on a show for football. I don't watch traditional sports, but I know that like commentators still get their fair share. And certainly more so even than esports commentators. That's a big discussion, but it still feels like it's just not as much. So I do wonder if like, I feel like esports is taken from traditional sports, and traditional sports is also occasionally, I feel like, taken from esports. I could look at a product of traditional broadcasting now and been like, that's more something that I like. And I start to look at it and I'm like identifying, oh, because it's a little more like esports, a little more casual, a little more like, you know, whatever. So that is interesting that I feel like as a, you know, broadcasting as a whole is still relatively new, talking like less than 100 years old. Yeah. So there's also advances there. But yeah, we've gone into the whole almost like industry side of things. So to bring it back to the minute details, play-by-play commentary, right? So you talked about improving. You're the one of the standout play-by-play commentators. There's three of you apparently on the broadcast.
Yeah. Quick shot, Dracos and myself.
Yeah. And you're pretty much set with that. So do you find, well, actually I'll ask this first. How exactly did you go by improving? You know, I want the nitty gritty details, right? So did you go see a coach? Did you watch a bunch of VODs? Did you talk to other people in your peers and get their advice? Anything along those lines?
So we're talking from like from scratch to now or?
Yeah, from scratch to now, because I know you've talked about having coaches and you've talked about, you know, over the last 6 years.
Yeah,
right?
Wow.
So what have you done?
Okay. So initially it was just getting the reps in, you know, like the more that you talk, the more you work out like where your flow generally is. And I think everyone does have sort of a speech cadence and a general flow that you should try and work around, especially as a play-by-play. Now you can alter that and you can have like different intonations and you can use fragmentation of speech and such to change your flow, but working around your natural speech cadence I think makes the most sense. So get it. I got like hundreds of hours of just VODs and casting, and I did, you know, 16-hour days doing gopher lols in my tiny bedroom in my student apartment, and like we've all been there. And so doing that at the start was like just getting as many reps in as possible. And then actually one of the other criticisms for my first application to Riot was that I have a rotacism, which is quite actually is an English pronunciation thing. And a lot of people in England have it, which is where you can't pronounce R's quite properly. Huh. So I use a W sound a lot of the time instead of R. So I say like Bowen if I'm really tired. So I did go to a speech therapist for that. Went to her for about 6 months to try and improve it. And at the end, she said, mate, you've just got an English accent. I don't think we can improve this anymore. I was like, okay, I kind of understand that. So yeah, I did that for a while. And then there's the self-review. You know, we all talk about VOD reviews and they are a very important part of casting. And I actually have a Google Doc. Let me get it up from like when I was starting to think about exactly how I wanted to play by play. So here we are. I had 5 sections that I would think about in play by play in each cast. And each cast you go in with a specific goal, which would be have to be like small enough that you can measure it and not small enough that you can measure it easily and not so big that it would change your entire cast around this one thing. So a lot of the time it'd be like, I want to stop using the word kill when someone dies. I just want to use other words the entire time. And then you could check it. And it's like, okay, I achieved my goal. That's cool. Sometimes it'd be a bit bigger than that. It'd be like, I want to be slower in early game team fights. So I'd say from minute 1 to minute 15, I'm not going to rap God. I'm only going to do slow team fights. So yeah, the 5 steps I had are early skirmish fighting, team fights, check-in, state of the game, synergy with co-caster, and the narrative or the story of the game. So under each of these, I have like bullet points of the things I want to check in there. And after each cast, I'd after like 1 in 3 casts, I'd go back to. Often the casts I thought were really good, I'd go back to. Because if you know a cast is bad, when you come out of it, it's like, cool, I already know that's bad. What am I going to learn from looking at it apart from the fact that I know it was bad? If you go back to one that was good and you're like, oh, I thought I was really good, you know, maybe a 90%, then you pick out the nitty gritty and then you pick out the details. You say, well, this was bad. I used this word too many times. I can improve here. I really like the flow here. And that is a big thing as well, making sure that you look at the things you did well alongside the things you did badly. Because if you say, I really like what I did here, listen back to it. Why do I like it? Well, I did this and this and this. How can I take that into other aspects of my cast? So I did that. And then probably 2 years ago, so, you know, that was my general progression for a while. And then 2 years ago, I came back to the idea of play-by-play. And it's something I've been messing around with for a while in the league space. Because as I said, like, all of my casting, like, what the things I enjoy listening to are very slow. Sometimes there's some big action, but even then, it's like, someone scores a goal in football, it's like, what a beauty, he scores, wow, right? There's no huge, like, rapid team fight or, like, a big build-up to it. I came back to looking at it and I said, well, how can I adopt parts of that into my general play-by-play? And I messed around with the Rap God style for a while, but it doesn't really suit my voice and I'm not as good at it as, like, a Flowers or a Dracos, so I would always be second fiddle to them. And I messed around with just slower team fights and generally trying to be more of a fantasy author in team fights. And that kind of works at times, but can be a little bit too overbearing when you're trying to be eloquent in the middle of a fight and you're trying to be like J.R.R. Tolkien. It's like, oh yes, the Uruk-hai came down the mountains. It doesn't really work that well. But it actually, one thing that that I did enjoy with that was looking at how you can set up a fight. So instead of just having it, they're going into the river and it's dark, like you build the tension with your intonation and with your choice of language and with like even asking observers to view toggle. So we see only fog of war. You can build up all of these moments where you and the fans are kind of experiencing the fight on the terms that the players are experiencing on. After I'd looked at those for a while, I came back to this idea that in essence, we're watching a fantasy war a lot of the time. And so I tried to find ways where I could portray that fantasy war without it seeming too over the top. And that's kind of where I've settled with my team fights. I try and make them larger moments, make it impactful and almost be empathetic to the character's experience in the moment. So if there's a huge solar flare, which is like an ultimate where a ray of sun hits someone on the face and stuns them, I try and like feel how that character being stunned would feel. And that sounds really weird saying it out loud, but by not just looking at it as an ability in a video game and looking at more as an experience, I actually think I can portray fights in a different light to other people. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're very cool approaches. Yeah, which one?
I hope that answered your question.
It did, yeah. I'm just trying to think of what to bring up first. I love the last point. Yeah, it does sound kind of weird, but I think basically my perception of casting is that it's all about like variety, basically.
Oh, sure.
So intonation, inflection, like the level of emotion, level of loudness even. Mm-hmm. And then kind of what you're adding in there is kind of that level of perspective, I suppose. So there's always like choosing one player's perspective, you know, one or the other. You could choose the guy who's losing or the guy that's winning. But then even the characters, you know, that's occasionally something really fun to add in that I think we do subconsciously just because we know we should mix things up. So we're like, yeah, that poor Marine got his head cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, again, just something to keep in mind is just always like, what new perspective can you bring in? What kind of story can you bring in inside the story that's inside a story that's inside a story? Yeah. Is really what casting is all about. I do want to ask about that document though. So you pinpointed like five broad subjects that you were working on. Mm-hmm. Was that in order of importance? So that was just kind of...
I think I just went through a game and said, what would I think about at each point in the game? So it's like early game, you know, team fights, kind of mid game, and then check-ins on state of the game and synergy. And it was more of a general thought process, mm-hmm, than an importance thing. I do have a team fight scale somewhere where I ranked the order of importance of what I should do in a team fight, or when should I use different levels of a team fight. So there's like the simple of this is what happened, the slightly more convoluted of this is what happened, this is what it means, slightly more convoluted of this is what happened, this is what it means, this is why the play was important, and then the two more levels, one with like player narrative in there and one with the game, like the big, I call them F-off moments, just the I'm going to lose control here, it's such a big moment, I don't actually need to cast the team fight, I just need to cast emotion in this moment. So it's like there's different levels of importance in a team fight, I guess.
Yeah, that's also fantastic. I mean, basically what's happening is that you're, you know, I think you're one of the commentators who's actually broken down these things and then even written them down as well. So you have people who don't think at all and they're just very naturally talented. Then you have the people who are like giving a little bit of thought. Then you have the note takers, I suppose, people who are actually like writing these things down. And I think that currently esports broadcasting is missing that third. Whereas traditional broadcasting, obviously, like there's even university degrees you can get in
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of overlap there, of course, but it's still esports is quite a different sphere. And then you talked about like, you know, Lord of the Rings, bringing in the flowery speech. Do you suggest reading a lot? Do you find that you're often kind of taking inspiration from the way that, you know, the words on the page flow? Because I've gotten kind of yeses and nos to that kind of question, like, oh, reading's ever helped me, and reading's helped me dramatically.
I think reading can definitely help. I was very really into like Shakespeare and poetry and acting and like all of that sort of creative side of things when I was younger. And so I have a natural bed of fantasy and overly flowery speech, probably just in my usual lexicon. And I think that definitely helps. But also when I read, it gives me a little bit more of a a different perspective. Like, you read a different author and they'll be like, oh, this is how I focus on the battle. Some will focus on the minute details, some will focus on the flow. And it can help. I don't think you have to. I think you can quite easily find that in other sources, and you can like listen to in-game dialogue, or you can just watch some cool battle scenes in a movie and be like, how would I describe this if I was going to describe this, right? But for me, reading has always been an enjoyable hobby anyway. So, it's a little side bonus.
Yeah, the best comparison I always give when it comes to literature is casting in literature is that I feel like in the same manner that you would get really bored of the same sentence structure and the same amount of words in a sentence and a paragraph, the same thing would happen in casting. So there's still a lot of things to draw from there. Yeah.
There's actually a great example of that. There's a fragmentation poem where he has sentences of 5 words each, and it just goes, this is a sentence, this is a sentence, you were reading a sentence, isn't this boring or something? And then afterwards it's like, stop. Fragmentation. Oh, the excitement. And it changes up the sentence structure and just shows you how, even in your internal monologue, it totally adjusts your thought process and the way you perceive the structure of something. It's really cool.
That is actually excellent. Yeah. I feel like if this was a class, I'd be using that as a reference. That's awesome. You talked about it. You had some drama experience in the past. So you grew up doing theater or music?
Yeah, only in high school. I played clarinet to like grade 8 and did drama, and I was a director for some school plays and, you know, acted in school plays and such, but nothing super fancy.
Yeah, sure. But even, high school, I was shy nerd who wouldn't get in front of two people.
I've always been a narcissist at heart. I've always wanted to be in front of everyone.
You did say you liked the sound of your own voice, which is actually the first in 47 episodes.
Oh, really? Well, I don't like it anymore. That's the thing. Like, I liked the idea that people were listening to me. And I think a lot of casters, you can cast for a lot of reasons, but you have to actually quite enjoy the fact you're in the spotlight to a degree. It doesn't have to be your entire personality, and I don't think for any good caster it really is, but you can't be willing to put your voice out there in front of so many people without wanting to put your voice out there in front of so many people. So I think that the idea that someone is listening to what I'm saying and enjoying or laughing or cringing or whatever, that's part of the joy of the job.
Yeah, absolutely. But on the, I asked about the theater, not because of the voice or projection, but actually I'm wondering how you worked with the camera, because usually that's kind of the last thing that especially esports people get to experience. Maybe they have, again, that background in speech or debate or something like that, but it's very, like, if there's a camera, it's for like the Channel 4, rinky dink TV station. So how did you approach that when you first got hired? Because it seems like a big hurdle, because your ascent was so fast. You were suddenly just boosted into this like super pro broadcast. Did you watch any of your VODs and realize like you stood weird, you don't do it with your hands, or did you actually have a lot of comfort there?
I think I was quite lucky. I was on the casting desk most of the time. I'm not often used on the analyst desk. It's not often you see like a full body. You really can analyze how I'm standing. I've got a desk in front of me. I can just lean on it like this and look at the camera. And it's kind of like, as long as I do this, nothing's really going to go wrong. We did have a producer who was really kind, and I said to him before a season, I was like, hey, I want to work on my in front of camera, how I'm standing. And he'd be like, okay, I'll watch you. And after each segment, I'll give you a brief rundown of what I thought. And so that really helped. Obviously, not everyone can have that. So, watching back is the easiest way to rectify that. But the more I've grown into being in front of the camera, the more now I'm just like, it's just there. It's just looking at you. Like, you connect with it in the same way you talk to a person, and that's the easiest way to deal with it. You can't think of like the fact there are lots of other people there. You're just chatting with mates, and you mess around, you toss your pen up in the air, you give it a kiss if you want to sign off properly, do whatever you want, but you're just having fun with a friend rather than actually thinking about the fact that people are watching you.
Yeah, that's usually the advice people give when they're talking about working with the camera. It's just pretend that it's a friend and you're just talking to it. But then, again, speaking of people that are actually there to tell you like you're doing something wrong or good, did you have any more coaching from the Riot side of the broadcast? Because I basically heard rumors that you guys actually had some professional coaching done. So is that true? Did you get it? Did anyone else get it?
For in front of camera stuff?
Media work in general.
Okay, we had we had a few sessions on social media and such, like how to interact with the community, what's good, what's bad, what they'd recommend, etc. I will say, like, over the last couple of years after I've been freelance, the move has been more and more to you come in, you cast, you go home, and less of the we're gonna train you and teach you and do stuff with you. There is there was a while, I think, and Ender had some comedy training or improv training on Riot's, like, Riot paid for it. He organized it, but Riot were willing to pay for it for him. So he had that as well. But that was when we weren't all freelance. So I think it has happened for a few people. I can't remember having any specific media stuff apart from we'd go out on rehearsal day and we'd, you know, stand in front of the cameras. People like, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. But that isn't like someone coming in. That's just our producers telling us what to do.
Okay, yeah. Maybe I heard media and
It's possible they did it in the LCS. It's possible also they did it in the LEC before my time.
Very possible. And then I think you did an interview once where you talked about, like, looking at the other commentators, like the up-and-coming commentators. Do you watch other people's VODs? Do you look at the up-and-comings of League of Legends? Or do people just kind of come and ask you, like, hey, can you look at my demo reel? And if yes, what are some of the common problems that you see for people who haven't entrenched themselves in the scene yet?
So I watch a lot of esports just generally, not just up and coming in like League, but also, you know, I watch StarCraft, I watch Rocket League, I watch CSGO, I watch the Race for World First. Like, I just love watching esports and listening to casting. So it's just generally, you know, I think most of us really enjoy watching other people do cool stuff with our craft. In terms of like what I notice the fault is a lot of the time, I think people try and do too much a lot of the time when they're starting off casting. It will be the idea that you have to prove yourself 100% every time you get in front of a camera. And that's that. It can definitely feel like that when you're starting, because you never know, oh, maybe Riot's watching this time. Maybe my big break's going to come from this person watching. And it's like, it is good to give 100%. But when you give 100% in every aspect, you don't have that much time in a cast to do a good cast and try and fill every box, in my opinion. And this is very much like, this is a personal take on like the buckets of casting, where you have like narrative, stats, team fights, conversation, humor, right? If you're going to try and fill each one of those buckets, you don't have enough time. So you have to pick where you fill and where you leave empty a little bit. And this year, like, a lot of my casting has been, I'll tone down the narrative a little bit just to have more analysis in my cast. And that's like a choice I've made. But you can't be topping each one of those buckets up for every game, unless like somehow you manage to perfectly cast, because you will just shotgun too much information in at too many different times. Follow a few threads, say a few things, don't try and overwork it, because otherwise it just becomes convoluted and actually really difficult to listen to, because I don't want to hear like 50 different bits of information about a team. I want to hear a couple of bits of information that you then retell me, you know, 20 minutes later with some extra add-ons. That's basically my thought. People try and do too much when they're casting, rather than just chilling and enjoying the fact they're getting to cast in League of Legends or whatever esport.
Yeah, what have you. Yeah. Interesting. I do think there's definitely that feeling that you have to do everything.
Yeah.
And for a lot of aspiring esports commentators as well, people who really do want to have a job in esports, they're also thinking already of how they're going to reach out beyond their main game, mm-hmm. which I don't think was really something anyone was thinking of even 5 years ago, maybe. You kind of were like, main game, get there first, and then worry about what else I'm going to do.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. So, you know, I always suggest, like, you should definitely try and host. You know, desk host obviously mm-hmm. is great to interchange between games and be just more available. But obviously, if you try and do all of it, and then you're just going to get either burnt out or, as you said, kind of just trip over yourself.
It's super easy to burn out. And I agree with you. Like, finding other skills or other ways to use your talent is really important. Like, you can build a YouTube. You could do analysis. You could do, who was it? Was it Huzzy? Used to do bronze battles. Oh, he was a StarCraft streamer. And Husky, that's
bronze
the one. I used to love bronze battles or bronze wars or whatever they were. Oh, they were so much fun to watch.
Yeah,
but yeah, things like that. There's a lot of places you can find fun in other parts of esports and other things. But just don't. You're going to burn out really quickly if you try and do everything.
And I also.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. I was also thinking that this kind of goes along with identity, you know, and I'm thinking, like, you brought up the comedic bucket, and it's something that I've really wanted to try and improve on because I think my bucket's very empty. But we used to have a commentator in control who, you know, he was pure comedy and he was excellent at it. And it's something that I think if you tried and you weren't really a great fit for, it also would come off as very inauthentic. Yeah. You just fail multiple times.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I was seen as really inauthentic when it came to comedy when I started out. And that's because, well, for the way I worked out to get past it is I think I'm not a comedian, but I'm a relatively funny guy when I think about it. And what I worked out was people didn't like the fact my comedy, and this comes back to our outside of the game discussion we had earlier, it was too much about other stuff. When I started focusing my comedy on the league or on something around the game or on, you know, my co-caster's relationship with me or something like that, people really enjoyed it. But when it was about, oh, you know, how much does the polar bear weigh? Enough to break the ice. People were like, oh, that's just too distracting from the game we're talking about, right? So yeah, finding, not saying that you can't do something just because it's failed a few times, but finding different ways to think about it and work around it can definitely help.
That's a very good point as well. And then my last question, we're getting some Patreon questions afterwards, is kind of on that subject of branding and finding your voice. When you got into League of Legends, the professional broadcast side of things, did you ever feel like you were not unique? That you kind of were like looking at all these all-stars? And I mean, a little bit of imposter syndrome kind of question, I suppose. But then specifically, what did you identify as what you were bringing to the broadcast? Why they chose you over everyone else?
Oh, wow. Okay. So yes, imposter syndrome, yes, 100%. I think we all have it all the time. I've had it a lot this year and last year as well with just, I look around at the people I have to compete with to get like the big gigs, and I don't see how I ever am going to beat them. And like, I've cast 5 of the last 6 LEC finals, and I still look at it and say, well, why on earth? Why is this happening? So that definitely happens. And I think it's not something you can shy away from, and if you get into esports, it's going to happen to you at some point. If you're trying to like compete in casting or hosting or something, and you have to work out how you validate yourself to yourself, and work out how you like say, okay, it's okay to think I'm worse than these people, but I'm going to keep working. Or it's okay to have a momentary blip where I'm like, oh, maybe I don't deserve it. As long as you come out of it and you say, no, actually I've worked hard to get here and to do the things I'm doing. In terms of what I brought to the broadcast, I think there was a... when did I join? It was Quickshot, Dracos, Veddy, Deficio, Pulse, and... Pulse and Stress left... Oh, Stress didn't leave. Pulse left before I joined, and then Pyra. I think I have a... It's going to sound weird. A relatively respectable aura around me. Just a... I'm quite confident. I'm quite well-spoken. And I come in and just like, yeah, I deserve to be here. And I'm also quite calm, just generally in the way I present things and relax. I think that's kind of what the LEC needed to a degree at the time. You have a lot of loud voices there. Like Veddy is very over the top. Quickshot is, you know, kind of on the grandpa side, but with Deficio, he's still quite bouncy and bubbly. And I presented more of a... I'm very passionate about the game, but it was more of just a, you know, you don't have to be a nerd to enjoy video games. You can just be a normal dude living life and enjoy. And that's not calling any of my colleagues a nerd, because I'm like the biggest nerd out there, but I don't present as a nerd to a lot of people. And so I think that helped. And alongside that, I do my medical experience and all of that just gave me a fun little branding avenue to come to that branding idea. You know, I did some funny doctor's orders stuff at the starts. We did lots of jokes with me wearing a white coat and finding that little, you know, hook that you can put into people. And I said it way too many times when I started. It was way too many times. Like, oh, you know, I'm a doctor in the medical field. I overplayed it. But now everyone knows I'm a doctor. So it worked, apparently. Yeah,
that's a great point to bring up. I think a lot of people, perhaps even sometimes it's a bit of a crutch just to be like, well, I'm really passionate. You know, I think I'm going to be the most excitable person on the stream. And there is definitely benefit to that, especially in an older scene where there's a lot of curmudgeons who, you know, a little indifferent. But it's also like, well, that's something that we actually can't find. It's a bit of a dime a dozen thing. Actually, having someone who already appears basically cool, if I'm going to use a super vague word here, you know, chill, comfortable, just like a regular guy, not super nerdy, not super just like tripping over their own feet at the prospect of casting their video game. That actually can be unique. So I actually think that was a really cool point to bring up, because so many people would say, you know, be passionate, be really excited, make sure everyone knows. And actually, sometimes that's a bit too much.
I was super passionate in my interviews, and I explained to them like why I cared and why I thought it was important, but I did it in a more professional way. You know, I did it in the way that I'd apply to a medical job or something. It also definitely helped me. I wasn't into esports until second year med school. So I didn't have like, I've never played the Final Fantasy series. I've never played the original Zelda games. And like people look to me as a mark of shame for this, but it also gives me this sort of, I had a normal-ish life. And I mean no offense to nerds and nerd culture. I love the culture that I'm now a part of. But when I joined, I really wasn't part of it. I'd never watched an anime until like second year of being in the EULCS. Normal dude.
And of course, when I say passionate, you know, I didn't mean to say that, you know, you didn't have passion.
Oh, no, just that, yeah, I understand.
You know, excitable and very, you know, almost geeky in the approach. But anyways, so a bunch I'm going to stick with the word cool. That's my personal
take
on it.
Rare that I get called cool, so.
Let's get into some of the Patreon questions before we exit this interview. So we got actually three for you today. First of all, so from Barrett, who are your favorite champions to see in the games you commentate?
Oh, to see. Okay. So I like champions that have large game-defining ultimates. That's my big thing. Because I know when I look at a champion, I'm saying, that ultimate can change the game. I then know when I'm casting, if I see that ultimate, I can get ready for a big moment. So I think Rakan, I love to see mostly because I really understand him well, and also his ultimate is great, and he can, you know, turn around a team fight. I'm going to just pick supports because I'm a support main. I love support. So I'll put Leona in there as well. And then probably, I was going to say Pyke, but I don't really like Pyke that much just because his ult is like, it feels like cheating. Pyke's ultimate executes the enemy from a health threshold. So he like jumps on top of them, kills them if they're below a certain amount of health, and then it resets if he kills them, so he can like bunny hop around a fight. And it's really like, as a support who likes the tanky side of supports, it feels dumb to me that this guy is doing, you know, a bazillion damage and jumping around everyone. Alistar, I really like Alistar as well. Just his ultimate isn't the big thing, but he has a really cool combo, and if it's combined well with other champions, he can have a big effect. So I think those are the three: Rakan, Leona, and Alistar are my three champs that I really love to see in game.
Nice. I feel kind of like a like this Pokemon where I'm like, I recognize the first 150.
Yeah, Rapidash, Zapdos, Moltres.
But then after that, I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Swarm hosts.
Yeah. I think the last time I actually was seriously playing League of Legends, it was like Leona being introduced.
Okay. Wow. That's a while ago then.
Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, that's a good take where the ultimate does big things. Second question for Mr. Chaz. My fluff question would be, what's your favorite Hades weapon? Because apparently you're a Hades speedrunner.
I actually held a couple of world records in Hades for a while. So Eris Rail is the most fun just because it's a machine gun that you can fire lightning out of. And it's the easiest thing to play on. But I think Hera Bow has to be my favorite aspect. Mostly because it just feels really fun. It's like it's a good bow. You can put Aphrodite's cast into it. It blows people up, and it feels like there's a little bit more skill expression than there is with the Eris Rail. I'd highly recommend Hera Bow if you're getting into Hades speedrunning. I doubt that's where the question was heading, but I'm just going to plug it. Hades speedrunning is the best. Really easy game to speedrun. No glitches. Really fun.
There you go. Mm-hmm. It's a plug. I have yet to play it.
Oh,
I know it's all the rage.
You really,
I'm not gonna. You said you didn't play Final Fantasy, and I didn't do the same thing, but I wanted to.
That's true. That is true. I have been hoisted on my own petard.
And the last question from Renish. Have your medical skills ever come in handy or been useful at an esports or gaming event?
Not so much esports. I've had a few times where like colleagues have come up and asked me, be like, hey, can you look at this rash? Or, you know, I've been having these stomach problems. What do you think? But out in Berlin, they've helped a few times. Like, I've been out at clubs and people have had, you know, like been vomiting or felt really unwell and such, and I've been able to help them there. So the problem with it is if I go out to a club, like I want to, you know, I enjoy getting drunk. I'm an adult, you know, it can be fun. And so I'll go out, I'll get a bit drunk, and then as soon as someone has a medical emergency, it's just one of those, you know, you sober up. You're like, okay, I have to do all my medical training now. I can't be drunk anymore, have to treat this person. So as much as it's nice to be able to help people and, you know, they you get to hospital or they feel better because you've explained to them what's happening, you then have to go and start drinking again. And a lot of the time, you know, you don't want to start drinking at that point in the night. So it can be a little bit, it can remove you from the event a little bit. But yeah, not too much at actual events. We do have a medic on staff at the LEC. I asked them if they'd want me to do it, but they refused my rates. So instead, yeah, they hired a different medic.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's like, I know as... When I go out drinking, it's almost guaranteed. I knew it was an e-sport event again. We went to Sweden in 2021, so last year. And I was like, hey, you know, it doesn't really feel like an event. And then like one of the first things that happened was we went to a bar after because Sweden didn't really care about COVID. And some lady got like super drunk and I had to take care of her. And I was like, Now it feels like an esports.
One of the players gets too drunk and you put them in an Uber on the way home and they take 4 stars off your rating.
Try and get her home, and then your drunk friend is having a heart to heart and you're like, the sun's literally coming up, can you just get in the Uber? That's esports to me. But that's gonna wrap it up. So thank you again for coming on. This very, very awesome conversation. Talk about the industry, talk a little bit about the finer points of commentary, some laughs about esports. So great interview, in my opinion. Where can people find you? How often do you stream? What's the next League of Legends broadcast you're gonna be on? All that good stuff.
Firstly, great interview. Thank you very much for having me. Secondly, medic casts everywhere. So Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. YouTube as well, I think, although I don't post that much stuff on YouTube. I am streaming a Peppa Pig speedrun tomorrow at 11 a.m. CEST, which will probably be a bit too early for you guys, but catch the VOD if you can, because it's a spicy one. There's a lot of clicking in that game. And the next league broadcast I'm on is a couple of weeks' time. It's the EU Masters semifinals and finals, and then hopefully I'll be on MSI as well.
Cool. Yep. Very cool. Well, guys, thank you for watching. Everyone who's listening to this podcast, reminder that there's a Patreon, patreon.com/zombiegrub. Big thank you to Shane for co-producing the podcast, as well as Barrett for helping out with the podcast. And a special thank you to those who go above and beyond. Nick, Vinny, Steven, E.T., Ruvy, and Cuddle Bunny. So again, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Metacasts. Looking forward to more League of Legends and Peppa Pig, apparently, speedrunning. Yep. I'll see you guys for the next episode, 49, coming in 2 weeks. Bye.